Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as you probably know, the criminal case against former IMF chief Dominique Strauss-Kahn is apparently falling apart following allegations that the West African hotel housekeeper who accused Strauss-Kahn of sexual assault lied on her asylum application to bolster her case. The New York Times reported yesterday that this kind of fraud may not be uncommon at all and that unscrupulous lawyers are encouraging the lies. And their odds are pretty good, apparently. Many of the asylum seekers vying to be one of the 80,000 refugees granted asylum here each year appear in immigration courts in New York, where about three-quarters of the applications are approved. And you can see how the system would be an easy target. It's almost impossible to prove persecution and the threat of violence in your home country, and judges would rather grant asylum on a what might be a false claim than deny a real one and be wrong and have the consequences be death or torture for the applicant. So how do you root out fraud without denying legitimate asylum claims in the face of uncertainty? Joining us now to talk about the implications of asylum application fraud and the challenges to the system is Judge Dana Lee Marks, the president of the National Association of Immigration Judges. She has also served as an immigration judge in San Francisco since 1987. Your Honor, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much, Brian. Nice to be here.
Is it fair to say that judges would rather err on the side of the asylum seeker because if approving a false claim is better than denying a real one, which could mean torture or death?
Absolutely. The false stories that do come are usually based on what truthfully happened to someone else. And so the stories can be extremely compelling. And we often compare these cases to death penalty cases, because if the judge makes a decision which is incorrect in terms of doubting someone who is telling the truth, that person can face torture when they're returned to their home country or even be killed. So the stakes are very, very high. But in terms of the absolute number of cases which are not true, nobody really knows that answer. There's never been any reliable studies done. It's all anecdotal and experiential for people trying to estimate what might be happening.
80,000 people are granted asylum each year. That's a standing quota? That's the number year in and year out, no matter how many qualified people apply?
No, that's not correct. There are set numbers of refugees who can come in from the consulates abroad. That's the refugee processing number that's set at no more than 80,000.
Uh-huh.
But the immigration judges in the United States are dealing with people who have either attempted to enter and are caught at a land border, or people who have come into the United States, be it legally or illegally, and if they're discovered by the Department of Homeland Security, they have a right to a hearing before an immigration judge. If they assert that they would be persecuted if they were returned to their home country, we have an obligation, the United States does, as a signatory to the United Nations Convention Against Torture, to hear their cases and decide if there's some form of immigration relief that they're entitled to.
Listeners, anybody out there right now here on asylum status, I'm sure we have some of you listening here in the New York City area. How did you apply? How did you prove your case? What did the judge or anyone else ask you or do independently to research you to verify your claim? Are you willing to admit anonymously, you don't have to use your real name and we're not going to track you down, that you did lie on an asylum application, since this is apparently very, very common, because maybe you didn't need asylum but you just wanted to be here? Or what about any of the lawyers who work for asylees? 212-433-WNYC. What's your relationship with the truth? 212-433-WNYC. Be as honest as you can here. 212-433-9692. For Judge Dana Lee Marks, president of the National Association of Immigration Judges. Judge, what qualifies someone for asylum? What do they actually have to prove? And how do you go about verifying it?
They have to prove that they have a objectively reasonable fear, future fear of persecution, or that they have actually suffered persecution in the past. And it's a very complicated legal standard because of the fact that genuine refugees may not have documentation. Many of the forms of persecution do not involve using the legal methods in a country to incarcerate someone, so there's not going to be a paper trail, as it were, because of the fact that it's difficult to get that kind of documentation. There are situations where people qualify for asylum based on their testimony alone, but by the same token, the law does allow a judge to require additional corroborating documentation, supporting documentation, if they think it would be reasonable to obtain it based on all the circumstances. We certainly don't want to ask people to put their relatives in harm's way back in the home country to get documentation or to provide declarations. But by the same token, if based on the country conditions, that's reasonable to expect, a judge can require that. And judges do receive training, a considerable amount of training, regarding how to assess credibility, whether someone's telling the truth or not, factors in terms of body language, factors such as whether someone has told a similar story on various occasions when they've had contact with the immigration officials or not. Whether their story is consistent in the context of country conditions. And it's the job of the Department of Homeland Security, Immigration and Customs Enforcement trial attorneys who are appearing in every case before the court to do research and to send documents, if they have them, to the forensic document laboratory to see if they're authentic and to pursue whatever investigatory means they can while still protecting the identity of the asylum seeker, because as we said before, if this is a legitimate case, then poking around in the home country and asking too many nosy questions could put relatives in harm's way.
Yeah. Here is Fran in Manhattan, who says she is a clinical psychologist who evaluates asylum seekers. Did I get that right, Fran?
Yes, and I sometimes testify in court, or at least I write my reports for the courts.
And thank you for doing that, Fran. It's extremely helpful to the courts.
Thank you. But my concern has to do with the tone of the program, which is this implication that there are so many people getting in falsely, and the fact is we don't know the numbers, but what we do know is the granting of asylum is so much dependent on who the judge is. There are some judges who grant asylum to almost nobody, and there are some areas of the country where almost nobody gets asylum. And by focusing on this dishonest component, which may be there, it's not something I've particularly encountered. I think you're somehow creating a view of asylum that is so negative that and damaging to people.
Well, this is the tone of the Times article from yesterday that we're discussing.
Exactly. I had the same reaction to the article.
So I think it
is misleading.
Fran, thank you very much.
Brian, I did start by saying we have no hard evidence to know for sure. There have been occasional prosecutions of lawyers who have been accused of feeding applicants stories and even providing them with false documentation.
So let me say, if you didn't, maybe you did read the story. Maybe a lot of the listeners didn't read the story. So to give a little more context here, the reason we're having this conversation is because there was a front page story in the New York Times yesterday with this headline: immigrants may be fed false stories to bolster asylum pleas. And then it goes on right near the top of the article. I'm scrolling down on the web version. It says, because of something that your father did, someone else, or something to do with the land, you understand that can be a way to get asylum. Lawyers tell clients. Often enough, it is. A shadowy industry dedicated to asylum fraud thrives in New York. That's the angle of the story in those words. A shadowy industry dedicated to asylum fraud thrives in New York, where many of the country's asylum claims are filed. Immigrants peddle personal accounts ripped from international headlines. Con artists prey on the newly arrived, and non-lawyers offer misguided advice. So do you think that that emphasis and the headline that I read gives a false impression, Judge, based on your experience?
I believe it's a significant problem, but I believe there needs to be further investigation as to how prevalent it is. There is no way that at this present juncture that anyone can reliably assess how many cases are fraudulent and how many cases are accurate.
Fran,
because there has not been sufficient investigation. And if I might mention, the New York Times also has a online section called Room for Debate, and that is carrying some further discussion by various experts, myself included, as to how the immigration asylum system could be reformed to hopefully reduce the amount of fraud while at the same time providing the internationally required protection of genuine asylum seekers.
Reformed how?
There's various ways that are suggested. The National Association of Immigration Judges believes that we need independence from the Department of Justice, which is a prosecutorial agency, to give us more resources to allow us to handle these cases in a slower, more deliberate, more in-depth fashion to be able to ferret out whether the truth is being told or not. We have an extremely high volume of cases, and it's difficult in light of that high volume to be able to really dig deeply into a case sometime. And there are times when spending that extra amount of scrutiny on a case will allow an inconsistency or other evidence of fraud to be developed and to allow the Department of Homeland Security to go forward and investigate that.
Here is Edward in Manhattan, who says he is an asylum lawyer. Edward, thank you for calling in.
Yes, I just wanted to add to the previous caller who's pointed out that the article making it seem like the asylum process is something so easy or something so easily gained, I think, is incorrect. Having done this, the first thing I would always tell my clients is to not lie or exaggerate at all, because all it will take is one inconsistency in your application to sidetrack the entire process and get the application denied. I've had one particular example is I had a client who escaped from prison in Congo and arrived at JFK with a companion. His companion had a different attorney and was before a different judge. They had the identical story. They were both political, persecuted because of their political beliefs. And my client case won, and he was allowed here, and his companion was sent home on the same exact facts. So these judges and the government attorneys do their job extremely well and will do their best to pick out any inconsistency.
Edward, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. And, Judge, as we run out of time, bringing it back to the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case, we've seen the case apparently fall apart because the housekeeper has been discredited, partly because of allegations that she lied on her asylum application, not having anything directly to do with her claims against DSK. So lying on one's asylum application can apparently discredit you forevermore in other realms?
And yes, and in addition, lying on an asylum application can then be a permanent bar to any relief under the immigration laws of the United States, including if someone once in the United States has a genuine marriage or becomes the parent of a child who eventually is old enough to sponsor that person, where you can get DNA and you know, yes, this person is a parent of a U.S. citizen who normally would be able to get legal status in the country because of that family relationship. They are permanently denied relief. So those are some of the ways that asylum fraud is efforts to deter asylum fraud that are built into the current laws.
I did hear one theory, just speculation, that it's possible that in her case she told the truth on her asylum application about having been gang raped in her home country, and then when it became a public matter in the press in New York, then lied about it and said, no, it didn't really happen, because then it actually would have become a problem for her or people she knew back home if this thing surfaced that she was making that charge. Have you heard anything like that?
I don't know anything specific about this particular case, but in general, it is true that refugees often come to the United States suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, from severe psychological impact from what has happened to them, and they are very fearful of relatives who are remaining behind in their home country. And there are confidentiality protections to try to keep people from disclosing information about an asylum, the fact that someone's even applied for asylum, and, of course, to keep the facts of their case away from the press, precisely to try to minimize those kinds of consequences, because it's a well-known phenomenon that it could occur. That if you are afraid that the person who persecuted you in your home country is going to read in the newspaper that you have come out against them and then harm your family, of course you're going to deny that it ever happened.
Dana
so
Lee,
it's complicated.
Yes, it obviously is, and I'm glad we had this discussion. Dana Lee Marks, the president of the National Association of Immigration Judges. She's been an immigration judge in San Francisco since 1987. Your Honor, it was my honor.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC coming up in just a minute. We continue our series on President Obama's financial crisis programs, the series that we're calling Did It Work? Today, are the anti-foreclosure programs working at all to keep people in their homes?